I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Susan Lindner. Susan is the CEO and founder of Emerging Media, an award-winning PR, marketing, branding, and social media agency. Susan develops breakthrough strategies that connect her clients to the right media, communities, influencers, and prospects. Prior to her 15 years in marketing, Susan worked on women's health issues as an epidemiologist and anthropologist in HIV/AIDS at the Centers for Disease Control in the New York City Department of Health, as a researcher in New York's top hospitals, and as a consultant and social development officer with international nonprofits in the U.S. and Southeast Asia. Susan, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
David, thank you so much for having me today.
What's your passion?
I am passionate about making incredible connections with people. It's something that I've always done since I was a little kid, maybe bringing two kids on the playground together who probably wouldn't have played together to get involved in a mean game of hopscotch. But as I've grown older and wiser, I found that that's my professional calling, is to link up two people who really need each other and to hear each other's stories and maybe even play together.
So you have an interesting background that I would describe, you know, based on what I read in your bio, as being somewhat eclectic. How did you realize that making connections was something that was really important to you?
You know, I think when you find that thing that you're passionate about, what you come to realize is that it's been in your DNA forever. And if you're lucky enough, you find it and you tap it. And you then find a myriad of ways that that winds up playing itself out in your life. So fresh out of college, I was really interested in helping women grow and connect with other women in whatever mechanism possible. And so I started my career working in healthcare at Sloan Kettering, working in the breast cancer division, and helping women connect to treatment and helping doctors get the most effective time out of their time spent with a patient. So that experience kind of led me to going to Southeast Asia, working in Thailand and Laos and Vietnam and Burma with people infected with HIV, and then recognizing the connections that needed to be made there in healthcare with the community, with groups who were activist groups in HIV and in women's rights, and then connecting with the government to ensure that policies and different programs could be enacted in local communities. I worked in a very small rural area in northern Thailand, right on the Burmese border, and connecting women to services then became my passion. And then when I got back, it was all about working at the macro government level and at the CDC and in hospitals throughout New York City to connect all kinds of people, especially immigrants coming to the United States who were HIV positive, and getting them into studies, not just services, so we could really understand the face of the virus and of AIDS, and to see how to stem the flow of HIV in immigrant communities. So for me, creating those connections at the local level, at the personal level, policy, government, activist, it's just all been fundamental, I think, to who I am.
Right. So I'm hearing a strong social service component, a strong component of doing this through and around health issues. Where and how did the transition happen that brought you to running a social media agency?
Yeah. You know, there are a lot of lessons learned in the process of trying to bring healthcare services, especially in impoverished areas, to different people. And the one underlying thread of what makes those programs successful is a killer message. And you will never connect with people on the level that you need to without a message that resonates with the audience that you are trying to reach. And what I found that I was good at over time was creating the message and creating a story around that message that would make people say, yes, I need that. And so I'm not ashamed to say that my nickname in Thailand was Condom Girl, because I would go jogging in the morning and find a way to give out condoms to villagers in the morning. And I would be working in brothels and in sex shops at night, finding a way to make people connect with the message of safe sex. So it was, for me, it was all about the message and adapting that message to the different audiences I worked in. And that's part of my anthropological training. But I think it's also the wisest move for a smart marketer is to start with the message first. And you'll never get there unless you really understand the core needs of your audience. So for me, that transition felt very logical from public health into public relations and marketing and branding and social media. It all starts with a great message.
So it's interesting that even when you are providing a what essentially is a public service, right, to improve the lives, health, and welfare of the people you're trying to serve, and I'm guessing that what you were providing was probably funded not by the people who are receiving the services or the products.
That's right. Right? It's government or nonprofit organization.
Right. So you're basically giving out something that is free and is designed to make the lives better of the people to whom you're providing these goods and services. Yet you're also saying that it's really important to have the right message in order for the people who are receiving those goods and services to actually want to receive them and to use them.
Sure. I mean, you know, you look at how many dollars are spent in healthcare today to try to enact programs, be it, you know, Head Start or nutrition or, you know, family planning. If the message doesn't resonate with the audience, people are not going to avail themselves of their services, regardless if they're free or if you're paying, you know, monthly retainers at an agency. It has to resonate.
Yeah, I think that's a really important message, because people think about the fact that, oh yeah, I'm trying, like in marketing, I'm trying to get the right message to my audience so that they will pay me. But you're saying that you have to have the right message even if what you're providing is free.
Absolutely. I mean, there are more than, you know, how many millions of apps are free on the iStore, you know, on the iTunes store today, right? You can go and you can download thousands, millions of apps.
True.
The majority of which are free. Many of them will just sit in a box collecting cobwebs, and people will not use them because the message has not landed.
Okay, so the obvious next question is, in thinking about how to create this message, what do you need to do?
Yeah. So I am a huge advocate of the work of Simon Sinek, you know, the popular TED Talk speaker and author of the book Start With Why. And in his book, he discusses how people don't buy what you do or how you do it. They buy why you do it. And as founders, I think for the many of those who listen to your podcast, and breaking through that plateau, you have to do the inner work of talking about why you do what you do. And, you know, I think Apple probably is one of our best modern examples of that why, which is, you know, Steve Jobs encouraged all of us to think different. But it wasn't just because he wanted us to think differently, but he recognized himself as fundamentally someone who thought differently. And then he put a huge ad campaign together, probably one of the you know, most exalted ones of the 20th century, of other people who thought differently and changed the world. And suddenly it wasn't just a marketing slogan. They were the people that we admired and looked up to. And then suddenly you saw yourself as a person who thought differently. And you said to yourself, I want to be part of that tribe that thinks differently. I want to be recognized now as someone who thinks differently. And when I walk around with an Apple product, the rest of the world recognizes me for the person that I believe I am, someone who thinks differently. And so that shift for how we perceive ourselves from a marketing perspective is fundamentally the understanding that a brand must resonate with the audience, who the audience thinks it is. But it can't do that unless the founder and the company itself does the inner work to figure out who it is, who they are, right? So that means the founder of every company needs to stop and say, who am I? Am I someone who thinks differently? Am I someone who, you know, leaps tall buildings in a single bound? Am I someone who takes the mediocre and provides it at the best possible price, no matter what? Because inherently my value is being thrifty, is being price conscious, is getting the best deal. Whatever that why is, you need to identify it and start the marketing process from there.
Yeah, it's a great place to start. And what kinds of shifts have you seen happen when somebody takes the time to focus on understanding who they are and why they're doing what they're doing?
You know, it becomes like a tractor beam, you know, in the eyes of a client when they discover that why. Because suddenly marketing becomes so easy. You know, it's like that same kind of sensation you have of falling in love. You're like, wow, that feeling that I have with that person when all the cylinders align and everything just goes, huh, this just feels right. It's not because you're trying to market against competitors. It's not because you're trying to market with the latest new trend that's coming out. It's a fundamental understanding from a corporate values, mission, and vision that everything is moving in complete alignment in the right direction, right? Apple then decided to align its company around those core values of thinking differently. It wasn't enough to put out a mediocre product that looked similar to whatever else was on the market. It was about starting from within, about what looked, acted, sounded, functioned differently. And it's not to say how you do something doesn't matter at that point. It's just that everything begins to emanate from the why. And so all other marketing efforts wind up having a kind of like a little checks and balances system. And you can ask yourself every time, does this commercial reflect who we are? Does this brochure, does this video, does this product reflect who we are? Are the people I'm hiring, do they share the same values about who we are and what we believe this company to be? And everything aligns. And that's what makes that why so potent. Everything shifts from that point on.
That's great. Okay, so let's say I'm running a company that's been successful, has hit a plateau, and I want to smash the plateau. So I take the time to step back, and I probably haven't looked at this in a while. So I look at why we're doing what we're doing, and I identify really clearly what the mission, vision, and purpose are of our company. Mm-hmm. And I start thinking about making sure that everybody who's part of the company is in alignment with these values. What's the next step?
So I would then go to, I would work with an organization that can help you discover that why. We work with a great one called Advantages in New York, here in Queens. And they are phenomenal and have actually worked with Simon Sinek to execute that why, to help companies discover their why and then put the next steps in place. So once that why is discovered, what happens is you begin to reveal where the cracks in the armor are. And you begin to understand that perhaps your customer base doesn't resonate, maybe not all of them resonate with that why any longer. If you recognize that you have a customer base, for example, that says, I just want what's on the market. I don't necessarily need that highfalutin why, right, kind of answer. Just print up my business cards or just give me a brochure. If that why is no longer aligned, you may find that you need to fire some of those clients. You may find that even though you have longstanding employees who have done good work but don't necessarily fit that mission, vision, and values anymore, they have to go. And so there's some very tough choices. It's not an easy process. It's a soul-searching one. So the next step may be to say, where do I need to clean house in order to get the right people on the bus so that we can move forward on the journey together? So that may very well be the next step.
Yeah, a team is only as strong as its weakest link, and it's and you're right. I've gone through this with clients where we look at their customer base and identify who's the right fit and who isn't the right fit for the reasons you described as well as some other ones. And it's a very painful process to go through, but once it's finished, they're always so much better off.
Right.
Okay. Right. So you've clarified your why. Looked at who needs to be on the bus, mm-hmm. made some tough decisions, then what?
Then it's time to get moving. So it's time to make sure first that that message is internalized. And it needs to resonate with everybody on board, right? So I would say the internal communications within the team are critical. So how can you create the underpinnings of this within the company itself, into the fabric of the company? How will you begin to celebrate that why that you recognize in employees around the table and in customers who share it and who exhibit it every day, but more importantly, those who flourish as a result of sharing that why? The next thing you do is you begin to look at your sales funnel and say, okay, let's pick out those ones who are going to be best exemplars of that why and make sure that we treat those customers phenomenally well. Because we already know that those individuals are part of our tribe. They believe what we believe. And then finally, it's the outbound marketing. It's the external communications to the market that begin to say, we are interested in pursuing people who share what we believe in. Join us. Join us in this quest to fulfill on our vision because we know that you share it with us. We share the same vision. We will help you get there just as much as you will help us get there. And then suddenly every customer becomes a partner in that shared vision as opposed to a vendor customer relationship. So then the PR and the marketing and the external awareness can begin, and it all emanates from that why.
These are great tips. Susan, would you be willing to share an example or a story of a company that has been that has hit that plateau and has taken the time and the effort to go through the exercise you just described and what kind of results have emanated?
Absolutely. As we look at the companies that we've worked with in the past, I think that there are many. But I'll start with one that really resonates with me. We worked with a company called Liaison. Liaison was really ahead of its time in creating the first private healthcare exchange, long before Obamacare and the ACA ever came into being. And the two founders who came from the healthcare space decided that it was imperative that the entire paradigm of the healthcare industry change. And the old model, as many of us are still involved with, is your employer picks your benefits, doesn't necessarily know a lot about your own personal healthcare needs, and chooses what's probably best for him and maybe 10 or 12 other executives at the top and says, here's the plan I'm going to choose, or here's three plans I'm going to choose for the rest of the business. Unfortunately, it doesn't take into account the individual needs of anyone. And frankly, from a legal perspective, I can't ask an employee if they intend to become pregnant next month. I can't ask an employee if they have an elderly parent at home that they need healthcare costs, healthcare coverage to cover. So the founders of this company decided there's a better way. And their personal why started with a mean streak of disruption. The desire to really shake things up. Both of them had that very clearly in their own vision. And the other was personal choice and freedom. So both of them shared core values, these two founders at Liaison, shared core values around personal choice and freedom, and that the world gets better when you choose your destiny. And so overlaying that why into their business structure said, we want to change the paradigm completely and have employees choose their healthcare, have employers give employees a fixed flat fee of their choosing, and have employees kind of run through a match.com questionnaire to understand and be educated about their own healthcare and their own health needs, and then choose the plan that best fits them. And that was their personal why about personal choice and freedom being extended to their business, and that carries on to employers and employees who say, we want something different. And suddenly they have a tribe of followers, of customers, who say, that's what I want for my business. And by the way, I don't want to administer healthcare plans anymore, and I don't want to be the one choosing for my employees anymore, and I want my employees to get this headache off my desk and allow them to choose what they need. So that company went from a small venture-backed startup to a $250 million acquisition by Towers Watson, a large healthcare consulting firm. And they achieved their own goal of personal freedom and disruption and personal choice when they decided to sell the business. So that was about a 4-year engagement with Liaison to get them from zero to acquisition. And we've done that for 10 companies in the last 10 years. So that's part of our model here at Emerging Media.
Right. And it sounds like there was one internal change that made a huge difference for the company.
Yeah, it was a couple, actually. And part of this understanding your why also then transcends to how the business has to pivot. Right. So while they started off with an in-house sales force, kind of looking at chambers of commerce and trying to tap many small businesses at the same time who had an independent streak, who were looking for this kind of change in their own healthcare plans for their employees and needed the flexibility, they actually found far greater success in working with the middle market. And recognizing that the companies who were in the most acute pain were those in the 100 to 1,000 range employees. And that shifted everything for the company too, is taking a look at, where does my tribe live? You know, initially the founders thought that this was a small business play for sure. But once that why clicked in and they tried to identify the other people who shared that why, they were in an entirely different tier of customer class. And suddenly the wheels started turning when those employers, many of whom had fast-moving, fast-growing entrepreneurial companies, but weren't staying at the 5 and 10 mom-and-pop shop-level companies, that's where they found their sweet spot. And so it's incumbent upon business leaders to look at and say, where does my tribe really live? And so breaking through that plateau was a shift in customer base for them.
Right. But it all comes down to understanding your why and understanding, then you can look at who shares it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a great example. So, Susan, you've done a lot of different things. You run a successful company. We all have influencers that have helped us along the way. I wondered if you might share something about who has influenced you.
There are so many people that have influenced me over time. I'm a voracious reader, and as I get older, I'm more of an audiobook fan, so I'm listening as I'm driving everywhere I go to try to pick up new things.
Right, and I know you mentioned Simon Sinek earlier.
Yeah, so another huge inspiration for me that really turned on my entrepreneurial zeal was Muhammad Yunus. And Muhammad Yunus is the founder of the Grameen Bank and is the godfather of what we refer to today as microcredit. And microcredit is the ability to lend anywhere from $20 to maybe $500 or $1,000 in the developing world, and frankly, even in developing communities here in the United States, to entrepreneurs who will take that tiny amount of capital, deploy it in a way that makes sense for their community, and then return that capital plus interest back to the next member of the community who's looking for a loan. And that shift in what $100 can do within an entrepreneurial community, and I would say the bulk of the recipients of microcredit in the world today are women entrepreneurs. They are making a huge difference in their communities. And everything about Muhammad Yunus that I have could get my hands on, I have, and I actually had the opportunity to meet him. And that was far more exciting for me than meeting Brad Pitt and George Clooney 1 year in Monte Carlo. So I feel very grateful to have met my hero, Muhammad Yunus.
That's a great example. Susan, what are you working on now? What do we have to look forward to from your work and your company?
Yeah, so we work with a very specific subset of entrepreneurs called disruptors. And these are people who fundamentally want to change the way the business gets done in their industry and, as a result, change the world. Those are the very strict criteria for which we select clients. So those are people like Note Graffiti, who are creating a social posting app that changes pretty much anything that you type into social media into beautifully designed, graphically rich social media posts, and that from a business perspective make you stop in your tracks and look at what other people have to say. The biggest haunting of the investment in social media is that you're screaming into silence and no one sees what you write. Notegraphy changes all of that. We're also working with companies that are looking to revolutionize the workplace. So we're working with a company out of Houston called iOffice, and they create some of the best facilities management software that doesn't focus on the assets of a business, but rather on the people who transform that office every day. And that slight shift for the CEO and understanding her why wound up changing how people look at their office space. So we're attracting customers that are looking to disrupt their industries. And obviously, they wind up telling the best stories, too, as a result. So it makes our work on the PR side a whole lot easier.
That's a great example. Who do you know personally who's doing really remarkable work?
So I mentioned our friends at Advantages in Queens who help companies discover their why, and we partner with them on a regular basis to help make that happen. Other people who I admire who are doing great work, I'm floored by the disruption model of companies like Uber and Lyft, of Airbnb. Uber is now the biggest transportation company, private transportation company in the United States. They own no vehicles. Airbnb is competing with the Hiltons and the Hyatts of the world, and they own no hotels. They own no physical real estate. So I'm fascinated by disintermediation, and those are some of the folks that are moving and grooving that I look up to. And there's one other group too that I really admire, and those are people who put their own employees first. And there is a search engine marketing company that I admire greatly in New York called Elite SEM. And their model of how they support their employees first has completely changed how search engine marketing in that community is treating their own employees. And they're a partner of ours, and I really respect the way that their work ethic and the way they treat one another.
Those are great examples. So Susan, how can listeners learn more about you?
Well, they can certainly go to emergingmediapr.com, and they can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. I'm also a regular speaker in New York City in the startup and disruption space, so they can certainly find me at Venture Out New York, which is an organization that brings international startups here to the United States when they're ready to open their first office, oftentimes in New York. And I speak regularly to their entrepreneurs who are coming in from all around the world. So those are probably the best places to find me.
That's great. Well, Susan, it's been a fascinating discussion today talking about how to figure out and create your killer message and create a great story, how to really penetrate the right market that fits with your own personal and company values. So I'm really glad that you were able to join us today. So thank you so much, Susan, for being on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Susan Lindner, the CEO and founder of Emerging Media. Thank you again, Susan, for joining us.
Thanks so much, David. It was great.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.